All right. Hello, everyone. It's good to be back here with you after being away in Ireland for a time. So we're here for the guiding light, and tonight we will finish up the section in the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi, which is called spiritual instruction. Before going to that book, I'm going to play an opening song. This song I selected just because of listening to Jacqueline's teaching this morning about letting go. So this song is by Francesca Battistelli, and it is called I'm Letting Go. Fits well with what some people were talking about this morning. So, as I mentioned, we're going to look at the end of the portion called spiritual instruction, which is in the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. 2 weeks ago, before I went to Ireland, 2 weeks ago, we ended with question 17 on page 38. And that question was, is it possible for everyone to know directly, without doubt, what exactly is one's true nature? And Ramana Maharshi answered, undoubtedly, it is possible. And so that leads to the question we're looking at tonight. And the question is, how? So this is Ramana Maharshi's answer. It is the experience of everyone that even in the states of deep sleep, fainting, etc., when the entire universe moving and stationary, beginning with earth and ending with the unmanifested, disappears, he does not disappear. Therefore, the state of pure being, which is common to all, and which is always experienced directly by everybody, is one's true nature. The conclusion is that all experiences in the enlightened, as well as the ignorant state, which may be described by newer and newer words are opposed to one's real nature. Just taking a drink of water. So what I hear Ramana Maharshi saying is that our true nature is isness before anything is added. Our true nature is isness before anything is added. And this is what I often call the first principle of God. And when I was in Ireland last week, someone requested that I call it, instead of the four principles of God, that I call it the four principles of true nature. And interestingly, this question is about one's true nature. So maybe tonight I'll honor that request and I'll call it the four principles of true nature rather than the four principles of God. But the first principle of true nature is what I also call life awareness. A moment ago I called it isness. But I frequently call it life awareness. Because it is made up of life. And it is made up of awareness. But it includes no subject and no object. And that's why Ramana Maharshi in his answer says that it is the experience of everyone that even in the states of deep sleep, fainting, etc., when the entire universe, moving and stationary, beginning with Earth and ending with the unmanifested, disappears, he does not disappear. And then he refers to this as the state of pure being. So when there is no subject and no object, but there is still life awareness, that is pure being, and that is the true nature. It's interesting if we look at the word pure, because the word pure means not mixed or nothing added, right? Not mixed or nothing added. And that would be the first principle of true nature. That's what comes first. That's what is, right? And then when we get to the second principle of true nature, this is when the adding begins, the adding to the pure. Which is why, if you happen to have been listening to the Guiding Light for some time, then you know that a few weeks ago, Ramana Maharshi referred to the second principle of God and everything beyond the second principle of God as impure mind. Impure. Which means something has been added. So the first principle of true nature is life awareness. But there's no subject, no I, no sense of self. And there's no object. We often call it awareness without awareness of. And again, Ramana Maharshi is liking it to deep sleep or to fainting. We call that pure being. And then in the second principle of God, or the second principle of true nature, something is added. And what is added is the sense of self, not an individual self, but just the sense of self, the subject. This is often called the I am presence. And so again, because something has been added, Ramana Maharshi called it impure mind. However, to be perfectly honest, compared to the ego, it's quite pure. It's quite pure. And it was after the subject, after the second principle of true nature, that the third principle of true nature came in, which is like a mechanism. And this mechanism enables objects to be temporarily manifested. So we have the subject, the I am presence, in the second principle of true nature. You could say we have the ability to be aware of, right? In the first principle, there's awareness without aware of. In the second principle, there's the ability to be aware of because there's a subject. But we don't yet have something to be aware of. So the third principle then evolved, which is the mechanism, the creative principle. And through the third principle, through the creative principle, the fourth principle is constantly occurring. Things are coming and going, temporary manifestation. And it's interesting how that third principle works, because it's really through the subject observing, especially with ignorant attention, it's with the subject observing that that ongoing creation of manifestation happens. And again, we can see that in ourselves. This isn't anything that we have to imagine. It's quite easy to see in ourselves. What you want to remember is that right now, in addition to being your true nature, you are also that second principle, that I am presence, that added nature. And the I am presence is easier to see. You know, when we practice awareness, watching awareness, meditation, we focus our attention on the I am presence is really what we're doing. Whether we call it awareness or consciousness, we're focusing our attention on the I am presence. So if you practice awareness, watching awareness, meditation, then you are familiar with the I am presence. You've already tasted that. And you also know that's what you are. And so what you are, this I am presence, through the mechanism of attention, can focus on a thought. So for example, let's assume a thought comes into the mind, I'm being treated unfairly, or that's not fair. That's not fair, right? If you focus your attention on that's not fair, something begins to be manifested immediately, and that's the emotion that you feel. If you had not focused your attention on that's not fair, that emotion would not be manifested. You know, or if you focus your attention on the idea, he doesn't respect me, you're going to feel something. Or if you focus your attention on the idea, oh my God, I'm running out of money, you're going to feel something, right? And all of these emotions are immediate manifestations. So you can see just by observing yourself, your own I am presence, that when you focus your attention on a thought, just through that observing, we'll call it interested observing, or as I mentioned a moment ago, especially ignorant observing, believing, just through that, something is actually temporarily manifested. And that's how that third principle works. So we have these four principles of true nature. The first principle, which is life awareness. The second principle, which I call consciousness, but it's the potentiality to be aware of. It's the I Am Presence. The third principle, which is the creative mechanism. And then the fourth principle, which is all temporary manifestation. And of course, as you all know, what happens is that we become much too interested in all temporary manifestation. You know, we become much too interested in the news. We become much too interested in Facebook or e-games. We become much too interested in what we consider our lives, our problems, our dreams. We become much too interested in our emotions, our feelings. And we certainly become much too interested in our thoughts. And this is called outward focus. And as we maintain outward focus, we fail to notice our I Am Presence, even though I Am Presence is a necessary foundation for any experience. If there's not I Am, if there's not the subject that is aware of, then there can't be any experience, whether we consider it a positive experience or a negative experience. So, of course, as you know, the idea behind awareness watching awareness meditation is to spend some dedicated time, hopefully every day, paying attention to the I Am Presence instead of the thoughts, the emotions, and the world. And the teaching is that as we pay attention to the I Am Presence, we awaken to the I Am Presence. We see ourselves as, I'm going to call it, I don't know if I should use the word pure because Ramana Maharshi is using pure differently. However, many people call that the pure subject. Everybody uses words differently. We become conscious of ourselves as the pure subject or as the I Am Presence. But what Ramana Maharshi is saying is even that is not our pure true nature. Because again, that I Am Presence is already something added. So as we continue to pay attention to the I Am Presence, even after having what seems to be an awakening to it, continue to pay attention to it, then somehow we go back even further and we awaken to pure being, which is before even the subject. And again, I know I mentioned Bernadette Roberts a lot when I'm teaching the Guiding Light, when I'm teaching the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi, but Bernadette Roberts does such a wonderful job in her book, What is Self, describing the process of awakening from the pure subject or from the second principle to the first principle, which is pure, true nature. She does an excellent job of describing that awakening process and probably of describing as well as anyone ever has the difference between consciousness, the subject, and the first principle, which has no subject. So let's look at Ramana Maharshi's answer again, now that I've said all of that to set the stage. So again, question 17 was, is it possible for everyone to know directly, without doubt, what exactly is one's true nature? And Ramana Maharshi's answer is, undoubtedly, it is possible. Right? That's a That's a very cool answer because, you know, you guys are probably aware that in the mind, as long as the ego is still present, in the mind, there's this idea that that's not possible for me. Right? That's just a part of the ego thought system, that it's not possible for me to know the true nature. And Ramana Maharshi says, undoubtedly, it is possible. So when we see that idea in the mind that it's not possible for me, we can see that as a lie. We can see that as a thought we don't need to believe. It's a great thought for the ego. Because if we believe the idea that it's not possible for me, we're not going to try. Right? We're not going to put forth our best effort. I mean, why would we waste the time if it's not possible for me, right? So it's a wonderful ego preservation strategy. But Ramana Maharshi says, undoubtedly, it is possible for everyone to know directly, without doubt, one's true nature, right? So, after saying that, the questioner asks, how? And again, Ramana Maharshi says, it is the experience of everyone that even in the states of deep sleep, fainting, etc. And I'm just going to pause there because Ramana Maharshi seems to speak in these very long sentences, and it seems easier for me to pause and look at these long sentences in shorter sections. And so it is the experience of everyone that even in the states of deep sleep, fainting, etc., you know, a great etc. might be when under anesthesia and surgery, right? It's interesting because the ego mind contains memory. That's something added, by the way, memory. Something added. The first principle of true nature, which has nothing added, which is absolutely pure being, does not have memory. So what happens when we experience deep sleep, fainting, or anesthesia? We have no memory of that particular experience. When we wake up from it and we return to the ego mind, we have no memory of that experience. And yet, somehow we know that we were at peace. It's not like we can remember the peace, but we know we were at peace. I thought it was pretty amazing. I haven't been under anesthesia a lot, but since I've lived here in Pueblo, I've gone under anesthesia twice. And when I woke up from the anesthesia both times, you know, first of all, it seemed like an instant, even though, you know, a whole surgery happened, it seemed like an instant from the time that I was falling into the sleep to the time when I woke up, when actually, you know, maybe even hours in some cases had passed. But there was this immediate knowing that that was what I would call a great sleep. In fact, Ron was under anesthesia a couple weeks ago. And when he came out of it, that was one of the first things he said, that that was a great sleep. How do we know that that was a great sleep? What is with us when we wake up from anesthesia that gives us the knowledge it was a great sleep? There's no memory of it. We don't necessarily feel refreshed. You know, we may even feel, you know, when you come out of surgery, I wouldn't say refreshed is how you feel. It's not that. There's just this knowing without memory. And I've contemplated that knowing. Because the ego mind, when Ramana Maharshi or other teachers point to things like deep sleep, fainting, anesthesia, as examples of what that first principle is like, the ego mind says, that's nothing, you know? And in a way, it is nothing, because there's no subject, there's no I am presence, and there's no objects to be aware of. And yet, as I really contemplate how much we love a good night's sleep, that feeling when you first wake up from anesthesia, where you know that was good, even though you don't remember it. Right? I realize that there has to be awareness there. Without awareness, how would we know that we love sleep? Or that we had a good sleep when we were under anesthesia? It's kind of an interesting thing to contemplate, because it's so different from the ego consciousness. And yet there is some kind of a knowing there. From what I understand, of course, and my meditation skills have not advanced to this point yet. But from what I understand, when people either they're blessed or they become very advanced at meditation, they go beyond the I am presence. You know, I go into the I am presence and become very, very focused on the I am presence. But they go beyond the I am presence into this state, which is often called samadhi, which is like I've heard Nisargadatta describe it as an awake unconsciousness. It's somehow being aware of life awareness, being aware of the emptiness and the deep peace of it without having the I am presence. That's our true nature. That's pure, nothing added. And so again, if we look at Ramana Maharshi's answer when this man or woman is asking, how can we know directly our true nature? He's telling us that we already have that experience in deep sleep, fainting, etc. So that tells me that it is worth it to contemplate what we know from our own direct experience of deep sleep, of fainting, or maybe of anesthesia. Because he's pointing to that as how we already have the experience of our true nature, our pure nature, with nothing added. So it is the experience of everyone that even in the states of deep sleep, fainting, etc., when the entire universe, moving and stationary, beginning with Earth and ending with the unmanifested, disappears, right? So in deep sleep, faint, and anesthesia, everything disappears. In fact, in anesthesia, it disappears so well, so deeply, that they can, you know, cut us open. They can even take out our heart and put somebody else's heart in our chest, if that's what needs to happen, right? Because we are so unaware of a world or a body. Everything has disappeared. There is no awareness of, no I am presence aware of a heart being taken out of the chest, right? So when the entire universe moving and stationary, beginning with earth and ending with the unmanifested, disappears. And then he says, he does not disappear. In other words, it's that present awareness of only life awareness without anything added. And I have to admit that it makes me really wonder about samadhi. You know, as I said, my meditation skills have not gone that deep yet. But, you know, when I contemplate deep sleep as I've experienced it, fainting as I've experienced, although my faints have always been, you know, only for a second or two, so they're not the best examples in the world, probably. And anesthesia, as I've experienced it. Again, there is this knowing that that's deep peace. What I wonder, and I have to say I wonder this because I do not know it, is there a greater awareness of that pure nature in samadhi than there is in, say, deep sleep? Or is it possible that there really is an awareness in deep sleep? That awareness is simply forgotten when we return to the ego mind. You know, I don't actually, these are still questions for me. And they're questions for me because, of course, I have not awakened to this true nature. Therefore, I can't actually know what it's like. Again, when I contemplate my experiences, of anesthesia or deep sleep, the only thing I know for sure is that it's an extremely positive peace. In fact, I remember coming out of anesthesia one time and saying something about how much I loved that. Isn't that an amazing thing to say when you don't remember it at all? That's how much there was still this knowing that it was this amazing deep peace. You know, I came out of it and I commented to the nurse how much I loved that. And she commented back, that was Michael Jackson's problem, right? Because he loved it too, and so he hired a private doctor to give him the drugs so that he could have that deep, deep sleep. And of course, as we all know, that's how he died. So it makes me curious about awakening all the way to the first principle of God. But I think that's all I can be, is curious. There's no way that the mind can figure out what awakening to the first principle of true nature would be like. But there's this confidence of this deep, deep peace. A peace that can't be disturbed, right? Our peace is not disturbed under anesthesia or under deep sleep or in faint. In fact, that's the blessing. If you're in a auto accident or something and you go unconscious, right? The blessing is the unawareness of the injuries, the unawareness of the scene, and you're able to go into the deep, deep peace. So again, in the experience of everyone, it is the experience of everyone, that even in the states of deep sleep, fainting, etc., when the entire universe, moving and stationary, beginning with earth and ending with the unmanifested, disappears. He does not disappear. Now, those last four words I really have to remain curious about. He does not disappear. Now, of course, here, the he, although he's using the word he, it's not the I am presence. It's certainly not the ego. The ego is gone. Even the I am presence is gone. The he here isn't a he at all. As best, it's life, right? Life is not gone. Isness is not gone. But again, what is it like to know ourselves as life without mind, without the sense of I am presence? Again, I've contemplated this question, but I can't yet know the answer. But when I contemplate the question, you know, immediately my mind goes to things like a tree or a blade of grass. You know, these things are life. These things do not have an ego, a personal self sense, do not have an I am presence, and yet they are life and some type of awareness. Because, you know, I saw a program once about a certain kind of tree. I don't remember the type of tree, but how scientists have observed this tree, and they can tell that the trees in the forest of this certain type communicate with one another. This tree has sap that leaks out on the outside of the bark, and sometimes beetles are attracted to that sap. And they said when one tree becomes attacked by beetles, somehow there's a communication that occurs because the other trees in the forest begin to dry up. You know, that's their defense. They dry up so that there isn't sap on the outside, so the beetles hopefully won't be attracted to them. You know, so there's not only life, there's intelligence, there's communication, all without I am presence, all without ego. So when I contemplate these things, you know, what that says to me is there is most definitely something beyond ego and beyond I am presence. There's evidence of it right outside my window. And another thing that I contemplate when I contemplate, again, the sentence here is, when the entire universe, moving and stationary, beginning with earth and ending with the unmanifested, disappears, he does not disappear. And again, this he isn't actually a he, it's life, right? It's beyond ego, beyond I am presence, life without awareness of. That does not disappear. So another thing that I notice when I contemplate that is that, again, form comes and goes, right? Form comes and goes. Like a tree grows out of a seed, and after so many hundreds of years, the tree dies. It ceases to live. Even trees have a limited existence, right? But life itself doesn't end when the tree ends, or when a human ends, or when an insect's life ends. You can tell that by looking, because life is still happening everywhere else. You know, there's that song, When I'm dead and when I'm gone, there'll be one child more to carry on, or one child born to carry on, right? When I'm dead and when I'm gone, there'll be one child born to carry on. That's because life doesn't stop. When a tree dies, other trees are born. When an insect dies, other insects are born. Life doesn't stop. When dinosaurs were wiped out, other life forms began. So to know myself as an ego, as a person, as a personal sense of self, that's a very temporary experience. It has a beginning and it has an end. But even the I am presence, right? Humans, I don't know how long humans have been on this planet, but we know trees don't have I am presence. So even the I am presence, which humans experience, consciousness experiences, even that had a beginning. But life has no beginning. And therefore, life has no end. So to somehow awaken to that point where the entire universe disappears, but I, and again, this I is beyond the ego, beyond the I am presence, but this I does not disappear. That would be to know myself as that which is eternal. Think about that. The entire planet Earth could be destroyed. And I would still be. And new forms would be born. Because I can't end. And I must express myself in some way. Again, it's not anything that we can, or at least that I can, envision. But it's amazing to contemplate. And it's amazing to contemplate that Ramana Maharshi says, undoubtedly it is possible for each and every one of us to know this directly without a doubt. It boggles the mind, and yet, undoubtedly it is possible for everyone to know directly, without doubt, what exactly is our true nature. Exactly. So I'll read this first very long sentence again, and then we'll look at the next sentence and the answer. Again, the question was how? And the first sentence answering the question how is, it is the experience of everyone that even in the states of deep sleep, fainting, etc., when the entire universe, moving and stationary, beginning with Earth and ending with the unmanifested, disappears, he does not disappear. The next sentence. Therefore, the state of pure being, which is common to all and which is always experienced directly by everybody, is one's true nature. Now that's a bit of a mystery. You know, when we're still dependent on the mind as our mechanism for knowing things, it's a bit of a mystery how this true nature can be experienced directly by everyone all of the time when we can't even imagine what that would be like. However, it's not a mystery either. Because in order for me to experience this egoic mind that we know of as the personality of Regina, in order for me to experience this egoic mind, there has to be I Am Presence. The ego cannot be without the I Am Presence. The ego is a manifestation, the fourth principle of true nature. And it requires the second principle of true nature to exist first. And again, we can each find our I Am Presence when we go into awareness of watching awareness meditation. But for the I Am Presence to exist, there has to be life awareness first. It's the foundation. Therefore, in my most egoic state, I could be angry at every one of you for something. I could just be sick and tired of every one of you, and I don't want anything ever to do with awakening together again, right? My most egoic state that we can imagine. If I can be that egoic, there has to be I Am Presence underneath it as a foundation. And if there's I Am Presence, there has to be life awareness underneath it as a foundation, which means I know life awareness. It's kind of like saying, if you drink coffee with cream and sugar, you still know water. The water may be very hidden in the flavor of the coffee, especially with the cream and sugar added to it, the cream and sugar being the ego here, and the coffee being the I Am Presence, but you still know the water, the form of the liquid, right? You still know the water. You might not be able to imagine water if the only drink you've ever known is coffee with cream and sugar. You've never seen or heard of another drink ever. And somebody talks about water and you're trying to imagine water. And they explain to you that the water is the foundation for the coffee, right? It may be difficult to imagine, but yet it's a true statement that you do know the nature of the water. It's built into the coffee with cream and sugar. Well, the nature, the true nature, is built in to the egoic experience and to the I Am Presence. Life awareness is a necessary prerequisite. So Ramana Maharshi says, therefore, the state of pure being, which is common to all, and which is always experienced directly by everybody, is one's true nature. As I read that again, I remember speaking a moment ago about how a tree grows from a seed, right? And so, and how trees communicate with each other. You know, when one tree is attacked by a beetle, it somehow communicates with the other trees, so they begin to dry up their sap. Well, that reminds me of things that happen in this body. You know, like hair growing, fingernails and toenails growing, food being digested, the nutrition being given to the different cells of the body, you know, all the things that happen very automatically, even breathing. I can notice breathing, but I don't really make breathing happen. It goes on quite automatically all day long. Even the blinking of the eyes. I can notice the blinking of the eyes, but I don't really consciously make that happen. It goes on all day long. The saliva in the mouth, same thing, right? So just by looking at the body that we experience, you could say that we know the workings of the intelligent, true nature that doesn't have an ego and doesn't have an I am presence, because it makes the body function. It makes the body operate. So again, Ramana Maharshi says, therefore, the state of pure being, which is common to all and which is always experienced directly by everybody, is one's true nature. And then the last sentence in this answer, the conclusion is that all experiences in the enlightened as well as the ignorant state, right? All experiences in the enlightened as well as the ignorant state, which may be described by newer and newer words, which is a funny thing to say, right? But it's true, language changes. The conclusion is that all experiences in the enlightened as well as the ignorant state, which may be described by newer and newer words, now listen to the end of this sentence, are opposed to one's real nature. Opposed, which means there's something added. They're added to the real nature. So if I am describing, you know, my experience, and I tell you that, you know, once upon a time, I was consumed by the belief that I was the scum of the earth. I spent lots of energy trying to prove myself, trying to prove that I was as good as everyone else. I spent lots of energy pushing my daughter, trying to make her better than me because I didn't want her to suffer in the way that I did by being less than everyone else, right? That was an experience at one time. That was ignorance. But all of that is not my true nature. All of that thinking, all of that believing, all of that energy, all of that experiencing is added. But I could tell you today, you know, that I feel quite clear, quite happy, quite at ease, quite trusting. And again, if someone is still experiencing closer to the level that I used to experience at, it's like, wow, that sounds great. That sounds great. You know, I want to be happy and at ease and living in trust. But what Ramana is saying is that is still added. That is not pure being. Pure being is the basis. It is not the experiences that thrive upon that basis. So it's interesting because the question was how? And you know, Ramana Maharshi didn't give an answer like he normally does, practice self-inquiry. In response to the answer, how, he said, you already experience it, but it's not all of your experiences. That was his answer. So what that says to me is I need to, and I would do this through awareness, watching, awareness, meditation, I need to notice that which is present as what I am but beyond anything I can experience. That's the how. And again, Ramana Maharshi would usually recommend self-inquiry as the means. So, for example, if I'm in meditation and the first thing I notice is thinking, you know, what sees this thought, right? What sees this thought? But then let's imagine I'm in meditation and I start noticing that I'm observing the observing of thought. What sees this observing happening? And then let's imagine I'm in meditation. I begin to experience this vast emptiness. What sees this vast emptiness? You see, any experience is not it. It's not like the ignorant experiences are not it, but the enlightened experience, the vast emptiness, is it. Any experience is added. The true nature is the basis. And with that knowledge, with that information, we can go into meditation and not be fooled by our experiences, not even our mystical experiences or our highest experiences. Because anything that we can experience, anything that we can see or be aware of, is not it. It's the basis of all of that. The life awareness at the foundation. That's the true nature. And that is the conclusion of tonight's sharing, and also the conclusion of spiritual instruction. So next week when I come back, we'll begin the section called Work and Renunciation. All right. Good night, everyone.